Welcome to Ad Exchanger Talks, the podcast devoted to examining the issues and trends in advertising and marketing technology that matter most to you.
This episode is sponsored by Publishers Clearinghouse. PCH is a leading commerce and media brand serving America's heartland by bringing daily joy to its consumers through winning opportunities, digital gaming, and personally relevant offers. Later in this episode, I speak with Steve Bagdasarian, corporate AVP and general manager of media and monetization at PCH, about the company's use of first-party registration and purchase data to provide advertisers with authenticated audiences at scale. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Ad Exchanger Talks. My name is Zach Rogers. I'm the executive editor of Ad Exchanger. So Pinterest remains an important digital platform. Pinterest users, they often use the app and website to plan out aspects of their lives, which are often linked to specific purchases, home design, weddings, meal planning, travel, exercise, and so on. People pin their ideas on boards, and brands can reach them with either narrow targeting to keywords and matched audiences or broad targeting to demographics and interest categories. When Pinterest reached out to me about doing a podcast, I was immediately interested, partly because I just talked to my son, my 15-year-old son, who had been using Pinterest the day before to keep track of some facet of his life. He's a bit of a collector in drumming and other areas. And I was like, really, 15, you're using Pinterest? I always thought of it as like a mom's platform for, you know, like event planning or home decor or whatever. But here you have a teenager using it. So I was interested. There you go. My focus group of one. In any case, to discuss Pinterest, where it's been, where it's going, I'm pleased to welcome John Kaplan to the podcast. John is the chief revenue officer of Pinterest. He took that job in 2016 after spending 12 years at Google, most recently as VP of Google's US ad sales operation. He's seen a lot in terms of digital ad sales, and I'm delighted to have him here to talk about what's up over at Pinterest. Hey, John, how you doing?
Good, Zach. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for doing this.
No, thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here. Excited.
So we usually start with a little bit on my guest's background. Talk to us about, you know, your life at Google. What did you work on over there? What was your focus?
Well, I was really fortunate to be at Google for 12 great years, and I loved every minute of it. As you said, culminating in a role that ran U.S. sales across search and display, YouTube, programmatic, for a number of our large customers. So it was a really great experience. But when I kind of reflect on the entire experience at Google, I think the phases of growth and building those businesses from the ground up were probably the most exciting part of my time there. Going back to 2003 when I started, you know, search wasn't a given back then. It was still a growing and early business. So in many ways, it was about building up that business. And then in the mid-2000s, we bought YouTube, and, you know, nobody really knew digital video. And in many ways, I think, you know, Google, YouTube, and the team ushered in that era of digital video, and then the complement to TV that came along with that later. And then we bought DoubleClick, and, you know, all of a sudden data-driven marketing and programmatic advertising was all the rage. Obviously a big part of AdExchanger as well. So that was an exciting and fun time to learn about enterprise sales and learn about kind of this new way that marketing could be transformed. And then the entire business transformed from desktop to mobile. And so each of those were kind of, in my view, kind of four-year phases within my 12-year experience, 3 to 4 year phases, but within that 12-year experience, that was a really fun part of the building of those businesses.
Yeah, Google dramatically ramped up during the years you were there, you know, and you really itemized it nicely. I would add they acquired AdMeld and other programmatic technologies, the following DoubleClick, you know, and it was, you're right. There was the search kind of wave, the video wave, the programmatic wave, the mobile wave with Android. And it was stunning to watch this spiraling up of Google as a global technology company from a search discovery platform, you know, that was exciting during the early .com years. When you look at what's happened at Google since then, everything has slowed way down because I think partly antitrust concerns and partly just the turning the battleship problem. Like when you're that big, significant change is harder to pull off. What are your observations about Google in the 4 years that you've left? What do you see when you look at that company now?
Well, it's a great company. It remains a great company. But as you said, it's really hard to keep growing a business that's now over $100 billion of revenue and continue growing at the same pace. But, they've got a great mindset. And I know that the way they think about this is kind of big markets and big opportunities because, for them, I think, $1 billion or $5 billion of revenue doesn't really make it happen for their top line revenue growth goals. So they're ambitious, and this is a company that has just a ton of ambition and potential and talent. So
is Google the Microsoft of our times right now in terms of being huge, scaled up, and being somewhat encumbered by that?
Well, I think whenever you get to be big, it just becomes hard to continue to be a growth company, to be able to grow at rates that are considered to be growth company rates. But again, I think they've taken steps like cloud to go into businesses that have the potential to be that type of multi-billion-dollar business. When I was leaving there, I was working a little bit with the Verily, the very beginning stages of the Verily organization. And I think the application of technology to healthcare is a big opportunity for them. So I don't have any concerns about Google. They're going to do just fine.
Okay, fair enough. One more on Google and then we can move on. So right now, Google is in this funny position of, they have the largest ad tech platform in the world in terms of customers and volume of ads they're trading and serving both publishers and marketers. They also have the largest browser, and they, the browser community is driving a privacy movement around the world, by changing policies that are going to profoundly impact digital advertising. Mm-hmm. And it does really seem like in some ways the left and the right hand over at Google, they don't know what the other is doing. And they're trying to coordinate to some extent through the W3C organization. And I don't want us to get too bogged down here in the policy weeds of how permissions and for targeted advertising are going to work going forward. But, I wonder what you think in terms of the Google's kind of, sort of sitting on a wire here and how they might behave, knowing what you know about the company, going into the next phase of this, which is in a sense, it's a negotiation between the business side of Google and the consumer product side. What do you think might play out there?
Well, I think it's, this is one of the most profound changes in the way digital advertising is going to work for the foreseeable future. And so, you can't overstate how important this transition is going to be. And I would just say, I don't know is the answer. Obviously, I haven't been there for a while, so I don't know exactly what the inner workings of the discussion. But I think from the sidelines, I can tell you that we're watching this closely, and we're kind of interested in how this is going to play out. What is the both the targeting and measurement ecosystem? How is that going to evolve? And then, how does Pinterest fit into that? But also, how does the broader industry come together? Hopefully, truly together to form these next generation rails that are running the digital advertising ecosystem. Hopefully, we all do that together, and I'm hopeful.
All right. Yes, that makes two of us. Good stuff. So why Pinterest? Why did you leave Google in your career, 12-year career at this company for this shopping and intent platform?
Well, I think it goes back to those phases that I was talking about that I loved at Google. I love that building phase and scaling phase that I described in each of the the examples. And I saw that same potential in Pinterest. You know, when I joined, there were just about 150 million users on the platform. We had a nascent advertising business. So it felt like there's a lot of opportunities given the user behavior. And that was really important to me. I felt like there was really high commercial intent and yet a distinct user behavior on Pinterest that was very complementary to other platforms, but different. I felt like there was a real moat around our user behavior, our intent data, and how advertisers can use that. And it turned out to be the case. So I wanted to go back to the build, and Pinterest has been that and then some. So it's been a great journey for me.
Okay, great. Yeah, I made reference at the top to my son using Pinterest. And, you know, right before we started recording, I walked into his room and I was like, what makes Pinterest special to you, would you say? And he's like, I don't know. I think it's like the feed is totally personalized. Like, as in, you don't have necessarily as much of an algorithmic effect with a feed, and you don't have other people dumping things into your feed that you sign up for as much. So it's more like sort of self-created and personal is the word. Yes. In any case, that's how he seemed to think of it. But does that line up with your view of it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when people talk about their experience on the platform, they really talk about this being this kind of personalized, hand-curated catalog of ideas that are specific to them. And these ideas are ones that, you know, they intend to take action on. They're looking for things to do in their real life. They're future oriented. They're not looking backwards. And there are very few platforms that are oriented around the future. And so people talk about this being kind of their me time, this kind of positive, productive place where they can find ideas, take action on them, and then go do those things in their real life. And that's what we really want people to do. So your son's experience is consistent with what people talk about on Pinterest.
So what's changing with Pinterest right now from an audience standpoint, from a product roadmap standpoint? Could you talk us through kind of the latest at the company over the last 1 year or so?
Well, sure. The last 8 months have been in particular quite interesting. We've seen more and more people discover and even rediscover Pinterest, come back to Pinterest. We're now at a global basis, over 415 million users using the platform every month. And that's a growth of almost 40% year over year. So, you know, just from a raw number perspective, it feels like Pinterest is more relevant now than ever before, as people are really looking for inspiration and information to navigate the pandemic. But you know, our focus has really been around
how much of that is about hobbies and like all the things people are taking up during this time, like whether that be, you know, working on cars or like, you know, raising house plants or, you know, collecting something or knitting during COVID.
Yeah, we saw kind of different phases of user behavior, the different types of things that people were doing. So when things first began in March and April, it was all about hunkering down in this new reality. It was cooking, it was kids, activities, education. It was building out their home office. It was home fitness, and we're kind of working through this new reality. Interestingly, as we went in April and May, people started looking forward. We called it looking forward to look forward, because they were all still sitting in their homes, but they were trying to figure out what's next and try to plan for their future. So we saw big increases even in holiday gift ideas in April this year. We saw a 3x increase this year for that, which is crazy. But in addition, wow, it was like we saw things like summer road trips start spiking. People had to delay their weddings, so they were searching for backyard weddings at a much higher rate. So it was interesting to see how that changed. And now we're kind of getting, you know, into more traditional seasonal moments. So Halloween is huge right now, but people are looking at Halloween differently. They're looking at backyard Halloween parties and, you know, at home Halloween entertaining. And then obviously the holiday is really top of mind as well. So it's been interesting to find, kind of follow the user through their journey as they get more and more optimistic about the future. And that's what we're seeing.
Okay, fantastic. Now, just to break out, you said the audience growth in the last year has been about 40%, and you've got more than 400 million. Was that what you said?
Yeah, in Q2.
Users monthly. So that's a Q2 figure. Right. Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
We were at 416 million, and that was 39% year-over-year growth. And again, I think what's interesting as part of that is that we're seeing really big spikes from these users in both their search activity. We had a 50% increase in search activity in the second quarter. And maybe most importantly, is a 40% increase in board creates, which is a really important indicator for us of engagement and people finding new use cases and occasions to use the platform. So that was really important. And then obviously our international business has been, and our international user base has been on fire. We've been growing that by nearly 50% year over year in Q2. So, you know, it's more people using it for more different use cases. And I should say that one of the interesting trends from Q2 was that Gen Z, this under 25 age group, were growing twice as fast as those over 25. So your son included, everybody's finding utility on Pinterest right now.
Okay, great. So I want to ask you about the business side, but first, quick break. We're going to hear a message from a sponsor, and I'll be right back with John Kaplan. Hello, and I'm back with Steve Bagdasarian, Corporate AVP and General Manager of Media and Monetization, with our sponsor, Publishers Clearinghouse. Steve, PCH is a unique publisher in that your experiences involve a chance to win. What does an audience that's focused on gaming and a chance to win make possible within the PCH experience? And what do marketers need to know about that?
Yeah, so our entire unique user experience is really built around, you know, gaming and chance to win, and, you know, as you mentioned, which really lead to this very unique engagement and optimism from our consumer base. We see the power of our authenticated audiences, basically, again, those PCH registered users that visit our properties electively and daily for these really brand safe shopping and entertainment opportunities, generate rates of engagement that outperform, you know, virtually much of the web today. The high level customer involvement results in this incredibly unique community that leads to the emergence of PCH as a trusted source for performance oriented brands, again, both in the traditional user acquisition sense as well as programmatically. You know, our experiences very much define our brand, but it's also a pathway to personalization and unique experiences for our audience themselves. And it's how we can convey and deliver on that value proposition continuously for our community that registers and enjoys our time.
Okay, and how can marketers reach the PCH community?
Yeah, so publishers and platforms that tout authenticated audience should really provide a mechanism that allows brands to stay in touch with their customers and learn and continue to optimize around the various signals that those customers provide, and along the way continue to enrich data sets. Those that stand in the way to really fail to deliver on those promises really will affect, you know, the future of addressability there. This presents an opportunity for advertisers to connect more directly with their audiences and make those connections via more trusted channels. Like PCH.
All right, Steve, thank you so much.
Thanks, Zach.
All right, so I'm back with John, and you've got this, sounds like, great momentum this year on the engagement side. How is that translating into monetization, and what are you seeing from an ads standpoint?
Well, I think the starting point is, you know, we believe that there's a natural connection between what our pinners are trying to accomplish and what our advertisers are trying to accomplish. You know, our pinners are trying to find ideas that they intend to go save onto boards and go do in their real life. And our advertisers are trying to get their products and their ideas in front of people when they're receptive, but also when they haven't already made up their mind about what brand to go with. And that's what I was talking about before when I talk about that moat, that different kind of intent that we have that's complementary to other platforms, but not the same. And so in that environment, you know, our feeling is that brands are additive. They add to the experience. And so as pinners have flocked to the platform, we feel like there's just a great opportunity to connect people with the ideas they're looking for from brands. And, you know, our method, the way we do this is by taking the insights, all of those user behavior, you know, insights that are new, like working from home and cooking and kids activities, so forth, and use those to help advertisers activate their campaigns on the platform. And so what we're seeing is success, I would say, in a couple of different areas. One, spend from small and medium-sized businesses. We announced in Q2 that nearly half of our total revenue is coming from that segment of the advertiser base. And it's because we've been really focused on performance ads. Yeah, it's a huge transition for us.
Are you syndicating those ads from somewhere else, or are the SMBs setting up campaigns directly on Pinterest?
They're setting up campaigns directly.
Okay.
And those campaigns are mostly focused on conversion and shopping ad products, which is what we've been building out for the last year. So that's been a really big part of this. I should say, you know, the partnership that we have with Shopify, which brings merchants onto the platform for the distribution of their product catalogs, also opens up opportunities for us to activate them for new advertisers. So that's one kind of big group of advertisers.
As direct-to-consumer brand, have those been big for you? The D2C?
Yeah, absolutely. We have a team fully dedicated to them. And again, as we built out these products for, you know, small businesses, these shopping and conversion products, those are the same types of advertisers, the direct-to-consumer advertisers that are using those as well. So that's a big part. But yeah, in addition to that, we still see, you know, other verticals, both endemic and non-endemic verticals. We're big in retail and CPG, but we're seeing, you know, auto and financial services and tech and travel also have success in the platform. Again, born out of those insights.
That's cool. And, you know, I believe auto, I believe tech, I believe travel. Financial services is a little harder for me to picture, just because there's not like a beautiful object or landscape involved. So it doesn't translate as well.
The key way they're using the platform is tapping into life events, and when people are planning for a new baby or a new home, or those types of things. That is the number one trigger for them needing a financial product. So the key is, how do we weave them thoughtfully, creatively into that life event and that experience for the pinner? But we've been very successful in being able to do that. So those are a couple of things. I think globally, again, that's our big bet. Also moving forward is investing heavily also in our international business and building on our sales teams. And so we're seeing a lot of success there too.
Could you speak to data for a few minutes? I know you guys can activate on keywords, search related, you know, data, intent, you know, and as well as demographics. But could you speak to what's most important to you and to your advertisers? What are the most meaningful data sets?
Well, I guess maybe to start, the foundation of the data set is the combination of those 416 million people organizing 240 billion plus pins onto over 5 billion boards. And that is our corpus. That's what we have to mine for people's interest and their intent. That's a really powerful signal, because we can also look at what you are likely to be interested in based on what other people who have saved that content or that topic are interested in themselves. So it's this interest graph that is powering all of the insights and powering all of the interesting ways in which both to target, but also just more broadly to understand their consumer. And so I shared a couple of examples of how we're activating insights for advertising purposes. And again, that could be in the form of searches. That could be in the form of just an interest category at large. But we're really, you know, we're sending out these insights to our advertisers every single week across a bunch of different categories. And they're using this both to understand consumer intent. This was really, really important at the beginning stages of COVID to understand how consumers were changing their decision-making process and what they were interested in. An example of this was we saw people searching for kids' activity, and there was this huge spike in slime searches for kids. And McCormick, who makes food coloring, actually tapped into that and created a series of pins that were focused on how you can use their food coloring for slime, which was a totally different use case than they ever had thought about before. But that's repeating itself every single week with thousands of advertisers. And so that's the foundation of what we're providing for those advertisers, that give them both an understanding of what's happening right now, what's trending, but also how should they be thinking about the future? How should they be planning for future events, seasonal events, life moments included, and how could they be a thoughtful partner as part of that?
Got you. How much of the 416 million and all of that activity is authenticated and logged in type behaviors? Do you guys share that?
100%. Yeah, it's 100%. Everybody.
Okay, got you.
Yeah.
So that's great because it means that all of those data assets are linked to individuals, which is correct. A huge challenge for the open web ecosystem right now. As the with the sunset of the third party cookie and the Apple's IDFA and uncertainty around what's going to replace those, do you anticipate having an increase in programmatic demand as that correlates to kind of uncertainty in the open web environment around programmatic?
You know, we haven't looked at that yet, Zach. Only because we really wanted to get the advertiser base understanding our insights, understanding how they can use our first party solutions and our data first and foremost in their strategy. It's not something that we've closed the door on, but at this point, we've been really focused on building out the suite of first party targetable segments and interests and keywords, and then also building out these performance products. And I should say shopping in general. I mean, shopping is really the big focus for us. So those have been the areas that we've stayed focused on.
Interesting. It does seem like there's a pretty big opportunity for you guys around programmatic too, though, because it's retailers and other web platforms, a lot of them do have the Pinterest button right there, right? So you do have the ability to do closed loop attribution and user level targeting, audience matching and stuff like that. But it doesn't sound like that's at the front of what you're thinking about.
Yeah, not right now, but I agree with you. It is an opportunity. I think we'll consider it in the future.
Could you talk for a minute about like this idea of distributed e-commerce where people can transact not, you know, in a number of different environments? You know, this Instagram is going pretty hard after this. And I think, you know, Shopify is tapping into an increased e-commerce opportunity during this year, the last few years, frankly. But, you know, it would seem like with all of the purchase intent that's sort of inherent on Pinterest, you guys might be able to enable conversions or at least direct links to conversions. Could you speak to that?
Absolutely. I mean, we think this is one of the biggest opportunities for the company and frankly in the industry. And obviously COVID has accelerated the pace of e-commerce. This is going to be a super interesting holiday season. You see companies like Walmart and Home Depot closing on Thanksgiving, Home Depot even closing on Black Friday, and instead taking those deals and syndicating them across the web for 2 months. And so essentially they're doing distributed commerce. But, you know, in our view, this is this might be a turning point for how distributed commerce gains traction. You know, shopping on Pinterest for us is a very natural evolution. We've always been known as a place for inspiration, but the number one piece of feedback from users is how can I buy the things that I find? People want to shop on Pinterest, which is a great situation to be in because we just have to fulfill that need. So we've been working on a series of products that continue to build on our shopping our shopping roadmap. It started last year with building out the ability to upload your product catalog into Pinterest directly, and we've had a lot of success in advertisers doing that. And then our Shopify partnership tapped into the million plus merchants, small and medium sized merchants who, again, want access to our platform's audience, and we're providing the syndication of their products. And again, an opportunity for us to tap into them as advertisers. So actually, a couple of weeks ago, we announced a number of enhancements to our shopping program, including the addition of new ads in organic shopping surfaces, like visual search in a place called ShopTab. We've rolled out our organic shopping experiences in the UK. And we interestingly, maybe most interestingly, we've launched something new called Conversion Insights, which shows the total economic value, the GMV that we're driving from both an organic and paid perspective for all Shopify merchants and everybody who's a part of our verified merchant program. And so we feel like this is a really big opportunity for us. We've seen catalog ingestions increase by 10x. In the first half of 2020 versus last year. And people shopping on the platform have increased by 44% year over year. So we just feel like this is a natural evolution for where we want to go. It's what our pinners want. And I think it's where the industry is going too.
All right. Fascinating. Well, we're going to leave it there. But John Kaplan, thank you so much for taking the time. Really enjoyed chatting with you.
Thanks, Zach. Same here.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to another episode of this podcast. We'll see you next time. To learn more about PCH and its digital advertising arm, Publishers Clearinghouse Media, please visit media.pch.com.